morning. I want to start by calming the nerves of some of my clock watchers that are in the room that are thinking, wow, Jason's just now getting up. It's going to be okay. We don't have class today, so I've got another hour or so to work with. We're going to be fine. No, we thought today would be a good day for us to instead of kind of having a full sermon time, have three smaller reflection times on passages from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 9. And in fact, we're going to be in chapter 9 next week as well. It's a really important chapter in the book of Luke. And I'm thankful to Doug and Ryan for sharing the stories that they've shared so far. And I'm going to focus in on another one. But I want you to kind of go on a little journey with me here and do a thought experiment. Now, I know a lot of you in the room may not be sports fans, but whether you are or not, I want you to imagine that you're part of a team. Now, you can pick the sport. I don't care. Baseball, volleyball, curling, whatever you want to do. You pick the team. Just make sure it's a team sport. And on your particular team, there is a player who is clearly, definitively the leader. They are the best player on the team. They're the one who calls the shots on the field, court, whatever you're playing on. They're the ones who everybody else keys off of. And they're the primary reason for whatever success your team has. Okay? Now I want you to imagine that you're playing in a big game. And you can make it a championship game, just a game that has some weight to it. You're about three quarters the way through the game. And things are going really well. Your whole team is playing well. Your leader is playing an incredible game. You're playing a good team, but you've got a lead on them. And you can tell in their eyes that they're getting a little nervous. They're kind of trying to step up their game to keep up and get, you know, tie it up and take the lead. They're really into this. And it's at this point in the game that the leader calls the whole team together and says, hey, y'all come in. And as you come into this, you're excited because you know what this moment is. This is the moment in the sports movie where the leader of the team gives the hype up talk, the pep talk, to get them through the last part of the game. And, you know, they say, hey, we've got this. Just keep doing what you're doing. These next few minutes, we have the chance to win this important game. So you're excited. You know what this is going to lead to. And so everybody gathers around. They're trying to keep their cool because they know what this is too. And the leader takes a moment to look at each person on the team, including you, and then says, okay, I want you to know that we are going to lose this game. In the next few minutes, you are going to watch this other team destroy us. And I'm going to let it happen. Okay, well, what are you thinking in a moment like that? Immediately in my head, I'm going to, this is reverse psychology, right? This leader is trying to flip the script on us and get us hyped up in a different way. But then you can tell this is sincere. There's got to be something more here, right? This can't be what they're saying at face value. There's got to be something more. And there is. A few moments later, the leader says, but don't worry. It's going to be okay. We're going to lose this game, but in the end, it's going to work out for the better. Just trust me. Does that help? Does that help in any way in a moment like that? I don't know if it would help me. So what do you do? What do you do with a leader like this? Do you confront them? Do you double down on your efforts to make up for them stopping playing? Or do you kind of quit alongside of them? Do what they're asking and just let the team be destroyed? What do you do in that moment? And how do you feel about the leader? What are you asking about them? You feel a little nervous about them, maybe a little lack of trust, maybe some embarrassment for what's about to happen, embarrassment about this leader. Completely confused, right? Okay, now as a thought experiment, I know this might not be super helpful because it's so out of the realm of possibility. It's so far-fetched that it's hard for us to put ourselves in a scenario like that with any kind of real stakes or emotion. This wouldn't happen, right? Except there's this story in Luke chapter 9 where Jesus calls together his disciples and he says, we're going to lose this game and I need you to trust me. Let me set it up. Really, Doug and Ryan have kind of already set it up. In Jesus's ministry at this point in Luke 9, things are going pretty well. Jesus has sent out his disciples. He has given them purpose and power, and they've done some amazing things, and they've come back to him. And then right after that, there's this moment he does this incredible miracle with all these people that he feeds, and he proves that he can provide. And so the disciples are realizing that this Jesus can give them purpose and power and provision. They're starting to clue in to what's happening with this Jesus. And then comes this moment. Jesus is with his disciples, and he pulls them aside, has a little bit of a conversation with them. And then he says these words from Luke 9, starting in verse 22. He says, the Son of Man must suffer many terrible things, he said. He will be rejected by the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of religious law. And then hear this next line, because this would have hit these disciples with incredible power. He will be killed. But on the third day, he will be raised from the dead. Now, I hope we can kind of hear this the way the disciples would hear this. This would just punch them in the gut. These words are basically the leader of the team pulling the team together and saying, we're going to lose the game. I'm going to be killed. And these disciples have to be thinking of all the other people that they've seen, all the people that have come claiming to be the Messiah of God who have been killed. They got to be wondering, have we hitched our wagons to the wrong horse? Are we in the wrong place? Have we given up everything for nothing? This would seem like nonsense to them, this idea that he was going to be killed. And now I get it. If you read the passage, he says, but I will be raised up in 3 days. But would that help all that much? In this moment, can they hear that? We'll find later that Jesus has to say this more times to them till they can somewhat hear it. It's hard for them to hear this in the moment. And the problem is, he keeps going. He doesn't stop here. He turns it on them and he invites them to be part of the effort. It says, then he said to the crowd, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way. Take up your cross daily and follow me. All right, now we've kind of sanitized this in our day and age. We live on the other side of the cross. And so we've kind of made the cross, something you put on a necklace or on a t-shirt and you wear out to kind of prove how, you know, holy and pious you are or something. That's not what he's talking about here. The cross would not be a sign of victory to these disciples. The cross would be a sign of failure. And so what he's saying is you've got to walk into the same failure you see me walking into. As he says, he's going to be killed. They couldn't hear that. The cross is a symbol of shame for them. And he's saying, you're going to have to take up your cross. Jesus knows this. He knows how hard it's going to be for these disciples to hear and understand what he's saying here. He gets it. He knows that what he's saying might cause them incredible anxiety and worry and even shame. But he also knows that this is the way it has to be. And so he doesn't stop. He He tries to explain himself some more. And so here's the last part. He says, if you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but are yourself lost or destroyed? If anyone is ashamed of me and my message, the Son of Man will be ashamed of that person when he returns in glory and in the glory of the Father and the holy angels. All right, I know that these are heavy and difficult words from Jesus. That's actually kind of why I did the little parable at the beginning here about the team, is because I want us to hear them as heavy and difficult words, as words that sound like nonsense to the disciples, because they would have. And yet somehow, because we live on the other side of the cross, we claim that these words are true. We do admit that they are heavy, that what Jesus is asking us to do is hard. He knows it's hard. And so that's why he does it for us, to show us what a selfless, self-sacrificial life looks like. He gives himself up on the cross. He does that to show us what it looks like. He does that to show us what Doug and Ryan have both called us to, that we can trust in him. He knows these are heavy words, but he knows that this is the way it has to be. He knows that it's not just that these words are difficult. He also knows that there's a promise in them. And you can hear him hint at it a little bit. He says, I will be raised in 3 days. Not that they knew what that meant yet. And he also says, if you want to save your life, you lose it. He promises them, he's giving them an opportunity to save their lives, to live life the way it was supposed to be lived. And here's one thing that Jesus knows. He knows that a life of sacrificial love is the good life. It's the God life. It's life the way God meant for it to be lived all along. That's the promise of his words. Yes, discipleship, following me on the road to the cross, is hard, but it is the best way to live. And the question that we're asked as we keep going on the road to the cross towards Easter is the question that Grayson posed to us last week. It's, can we believe that? Can we trust the leader of the team who tells us it's going to look like we lose the game, but things are going to be okay? Because that Jesus that tells us this, he's the same Jesus that still gives power and purpose and provision. He's still that same Jesus. Can we believe him? Church, will you stand? As we get ready for Easter, I want to suggest this week, 3 things that you might do as we start heading that way. First, spend time praising Jesus for his willingness to walk the road to the cross for us. Just times of praise in your prayer life, maybe singing. Praise him for what he's done. And then number 2, ask him to give you the strength to join him on the road to the cross, to believe that a life of sacrificial love is the way to live. And then 3rd, and this might be the most important, this is the one we like to skip, is ask God to reveal to you, what are the places where you're holding on too much? What are the places where you haven't given over in trusting Jesus? What are the aspects of your life where you're still the center and in control? Ask God to reveal that to you, and I promise you that he will. As I said, these are difficult words, but the time leading up to Easter is a time when we deal with difficult words. Those hard calls of Jesus that say, follow me on the road to the cross. If you would like in these next few moments, as we sing a song, someone to pray with or to be with, we have some of our leaders back here by this Respond banner. You can join them as we sing together.